All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we're diving deep into those final chapters of Genesis, chapters 49 through 50. It's Jacob's blessings, Joseph's forgiveness, and really that bridge to the whole Exodus story. I mean, you've given me a ton of stuff to look at here, excerpts, analysis. It's like ancient family drama meets, divine prophecy. So let's get right to it.
Yeah, these chapters, they really pack a punch, don't they? I mean, they're so rich with, well, everything, symbolism, foreshadowing. They lay the groundwork for so much that comes later in Exodus and beyond.
For sure, for sure. And speaking of foreshadowing, one thing that just leaped out at me going through your research was this crazy number of like doubles in the Joseph story. We've got double dreams, double plans, two sons, even two journeys down to Egypt. It's like somebody's holding up a mirror to the whole thing. Why so many pairs?
It's a good question. It's definitely not accidental. If you look at it from the perspective of biblical numerology, that's the study of the symbolic meaning of numbers in the Bible. The number two, it often represents division or like a double portion.
Okay, I'm with you so far, but what does that have to do with Joseph specifically?
Well, think about it. Joseph's sons end up getting a double inheritance, right?
Yeah.
That leads to the 12 tribes of Israel, the division of the tribes. And then, on a deeper level, all these doubles, could it be hinting at an even bigger division to come? Like the split between the old and new covenants. It's this subtle little thread running through the text.
Wow, I never thought about it that way. Kind of makes you wonder what other hidden messages are buried in there, huh?
Oh, there are tons. That's the fun of it, right? Digging deep into these texts, you always find something new.
Right, totally. So, okay, we've got all these doubles floating around, but then we get to Jacob's farewell speeches to his sons. And man, things get interesting. We've got lions and snakes and donkeys. It's a whole zoo. But I gotta say, some of these blessings sound more like curses to me.
Yeah, you're picking up on something really important there. Like
Yeah.
the blessings given to Reuben, Simeon, and Levi, those are definitely not the best.
No kidding.
Their actions, they have consequences. Reuben's, well, the incest, and then Simeon and Levi's violence. Those less than stellar blessings, they reflect that.
It's like that old saying, actions have consequences,
Correct.
even way back then.
Exactly. And, there's another layer to this whole thing, these kind of anti-blessings. Right? They highlight this theme that keeps popping up all over the Bible. The firstborn son, he messes up, he loses his special position. Happens again and again. Cain and Abel, Esau and Jacob.
Oh, yeah. Like a warning to all the firstborn children out there.
Maybe. But speaking of those anti-blessings, there's this fascinating detail about Simeon's tribe. I think you'll find it interesting.
Okay, I'm all ears.
So their territory, it eventually gets absorbed into Judah's, showing how the map of Israel changes over time.
Right. It's a reminder that even those boundaries, land, inheritance can shift. Speaking of which, can we talk about Judah? His blessing, that's where things get really interesting. We're talking dominion, military might, and kingship.
Now you're talking. This is where it all starts to come together. Seeds of the Davidic monarchy right here, leading to, well, you know who?
Hold on. You're saying Judah's blessing. It's a prophecy about Jesus.
There are definitely messianic elements woven in there, especially that scepter prophecy in Genesis 49:10.
Okay, whoa, whoa. Back up. Scepter prophecy. What's that?
It's the promise that Judah's tribe, they'll hold the ruling power, symbolized by the scepter, right? The scepter of authority, until the coming of Shiloh.
Shiloh. Now that's a new one for me.
Shiloh, it's a mysterious term. Lots of different interpretations out there. But many scholars think it's a title for the Messiah. Some early Jewish writings even directly connect Shiloh with a king from David's line.
So centuries before Jesus is even born, this prophecy is already hinting at him. Wow.
It is pretty amazing. And it's important to remember, this prophecy, it's partially fulfilled with King David, but its ultimate fulfillment, Jesus, the true king and Messiah.
Okay, mind officially blown. That's one of those aha moments I love about these deep dives.
For sure. It reminds us there are layers and layers of meaning in these stories.
Totally. So we've got the doubles, the scepter prophecy pointing to Jesus. What's next?
Let's go back to Joseph. Remember how much he cried throughout this story? Well, guess what? More tears are coming as we move into the last part of Genesis.
More tears. Really? Okay, bring on the tissues. I'm ready.
You'll need them. Trust me.
Seriously, this guy could give any soap opera a run for its money.
Right. But you got to remember, back then, emotions were just different. People were, well, more dramatic, I guess you could say. And Joseph had been through a lot. So in these chapters, he's crying again because his brothers are terrified of what he's going to do now that Jacob's dead.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'd be a little worried too. If I were them, I mean, they did sell him into slavery. You think he's holding a grudge?
Their fear definitely shows they still feel guilty about it. Even though Joseph said he forgave them, they're not so sure he meant it, now that their dad's not around to protect them.
So what do? Do they just, like, run and hide?
They send a message to Joseph, basically begging for forgiveness, saying they'll be his slaves, whatever he wants. Then they go before him in person, bowing down, repeating the whole thing.
Wow, talk about desperate. How does Joseph react to all of this?
He cries, of course. But then he says something really interesting. He says, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God?"
Whoa, that's deep. Like he's saying, vengeance isn't mine to give.
Exactly. He's acknowledging that it's God's place to judge, not his. And then, get this, he says one of the most powerful lines in the whole story. "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives."
Chills, literal chills. God intended it for good. That is such a powerful idea. Like, even the worst things that happen to us, God can use them for something bigger, something better.
Right. Joseph's whole life is like an example of that. Forgiveness, God's providence, and the crazy way God's plans can unfold. Even when it seems like everything's falling apart, God's working behind the scenes, putting together this huge story of redemption.
It's a good reminder that we're not really in control, huh? Sometimes what we think is a disaster is actually part of a bigger, more beautiful plan.
Absolutely. And this brings us to another crucial moment, the deathbed oath. As Joseph's getting close to the end of his life, he makes his family promise to take his bones back to Canaan with them.
That always seemed kind of strange to me. Why not just, you know, let him rest in peace in Egypt? Why insist on being buried in Canaan?
It's not just about a burial place. It's a symbol of their future exodus, a reminder that they're not meant to stay in Egypt forever, that their real home is the land God promised their ancestors.
So it's like a physical connection between where they are now and where they're going.
Exactly. And it's also a huge act of faith. Even in death, Joseph wants to be part of their journey back to the promised land.
Wow. It's like he's saying, "I might not live to see it, but I believe God will keep his promise, and I want to be there when it happens."
Powerful, right?
Absolutely. But before we get ahead of ourselves and jump into the Exodus story, can we go back to the funeral procession for a second? I noticed that they went up the Transjordan, the east side of the Jordan River, before crossing over to bury Jacob in Canaan. Why take a long way around?
That's a great observation. It actually fits into a pattern we see throughout the Pentateuch. That's the first five books of the Bible. From Abraham's journey all the way to Joshua conquering Canaan, entering the promised land from the east, crossing the Jordan. It seems to be pretty important symbolically.
Interesting. So like going from east to west, is that like a spiritual journey too?
Yeah, you could see it that way. Leaving the old behind and stepping into the new, and this whole theme of journeying, of crossing over, it goes beyond just the physical, right? We see it all through the scriptures, talking about the spiritual journeys we all go on, from spiritual death to life, from darkness to light.
I never would have made that connection. It's amazing how even these little details can open up such a big truths.
That's the beauty of a deep dive.
You got that right. So let's recap. We've got these recurring doubles, the scepter prophecy pointing to Jesus, the power of forgiveness through Joseph, and this constant reminder of God's providence, even when things are tough. What an incredible story. What are your final thoughts as we wrap up Genesis?
Well, you know, what really strikes me is how these personal human stories, they're all woven into this grand narrative of God's plan for humanity.
It's true. It's what makes the Bible so engaging, I think. It's not just a bunch of abstract ideas, you know. Mm-hmm. It's about real people, real emotions, real struggles. And we see God working through all of that, guiding people, revealing his purpose for the world. It's like we're seeing the big picture and the small details all at once.
Exactly. And that's what I want to leave our listeners with today. As we finish up our deep dive into Genesis 49 through 50, this idea that even in the messiness of life, even when things are chaotic and painful, God is working. He has a plan, and he wants us to be a part of it.
It's a message of hope, for sure. No matter what we're going through, no matter how lost or confused we might feel, we can trust that God's with us, working everything together for good.
Absolutely. So this week, maybe as you're going about your day, think about this idea of divine providence.
Yeah.
Is it at work in your own life? What seemingly small doubles or recurring patterns do you notice? What east to west journeys are you on, whether physically or spiritually?
It's a good reminder to pay attention, to look for those little signs of God's presence, and to trust that even when we're not sure what's going on, he's weaving a beautiful story of redemption.
You never know what you thought was a detour or a setback might actually be God leading you to something greater, something more amazing than you could have imagined.
It's been great exploring these last chapters of Genesis with you. Like always, we want to hear from you. Share your thoughts, insights, aha moments on social media. Let's keep the conversation going. Until next time, happy diving.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? And, you know, what gets me is how these very personal stories, like real people going through stuff, it's all part of this huge story of God's plan for everyone.
Right. That's what makes the Bible so different, I think. It's not just some abstract philosophy book. It's about real people with real emotions facing real challenges. And we see God working through it all, orchestrating events, guiding people, showing us what he's all about.
Exactly. It's like we're zoomed in on these individual lives, these families. But at the same time, we're getting glimpses of this epic, cosmic story, the story that spans generations and points to redemption ultimately.
I love that, the micro and the macro all at once.
Yeah, and that's what I really want to leave our listeners with today as we wrap up our deep dive into Genesis 49 through 50. Even when life is messy, even when things seem chaotic, painful, God is working. He has a plan, and he wants us to be a part of it.
That's a powerful message of hope for sure. No matter what we're facing, how lost we feel, we can trust God is with us, working everything out for good.
Absolutely. So maybe this week, as you're going about your day, think about this idea of divine providence. Is it at work in your own life? What are those little doubles or patterns you notice? Those east to west journeys you're on? Physically, spiritually, you know?
Yeah, I love that. It's an invitation to pay attention, to look for those signs of God's presence, to trust that even when we're uncertain, he's weaving a beautiful story of redemption.
And who knows, what you thought was a detour, a mistake, might actually be God leading you to something greater, something amazing.
It's been awesome exploring these last chapters of Genesis with you. And as always, we want to hear from you. Share your thoughts, your insights, your aha moments on social media. Let's keep talking. Until next time, happy diving.